love musicals. Classic musicals.
Is this the 2012 Les Miserables?
Weird musicals.
We're talking about Little Shop of Horrors. Musicals that make us laugh.
2005 film, The Producers. Musicals that make us cringe.
This isn't like, oh, fun trippy visuals, this is scary trippy visuals.
But if we've learned anything from talking about musicals, it's that at the end of the day, there is always a rant to be had.
It's like she's in a dead-end marriage.
These aren't hockey pads.
Fever dream of a reality.
She murdered Jennifer Hudson.
She's like Cat Pope.
Adolf Elizabeth Hitler.
Square share, you die.
I mean, what's a more romantic setting than a bunch of laundry?
So on our podcast, we do our best to discuss the most famous and infamous movie musicals you all love.
So let's pull back the curtain and begin our
stage rant.
Here we go. And we're back.
We're back.
We took a little hiatus again.
Listen. Dear Stage Rant fans, we've been way too out of touch. Things have been crazy, and it sucks that we haven't ranted much. But I should tell you that it's time for the finale.
It is.
After a weird hiatus.
Yeah.
So that mostly came from waiting for this film to come out, so that we could finish with it.
Yes. That, also, I got a new job.
Yeah.
I moved again.
Yeah.
So there was that.
Life.
Life happened. Life.
To life.
Okay. But, we'll cover Riddler later.
But, yeah, this is Stage Rant. We're back.
Yeah.
We're back.
Yeah, so should I do the spiel?
Yeah, do the spiel.
All right, welcome to Stage Rant, where two dudes equally secure in their masculinity and the sexuality break down the biggest movie musicals. Each week, myself, Adam, a man who sees too many people waving through windows, discusses the history of a show with...
Joe, a man who was reminded in the worst possible way that Ben Platt is in fact 28 years old, who has a lot of strong opinions, yeah, and such. So without further ado, let's begin the show. So Adam,
yeah, take it away.
What does the disheveled Jewish man Ben Platt?
I have alcohol for this one.
The problematic nature of social media and Julianne Moore have in common.
Ooh, Julianne Moore. I do like her. Is this the 2010s remake of Carrie?
Oh my gosh. Interesting. Interesting choice. No, it's Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, okay.
The thing we've been talking about for a while, and I even mentioned already in the intro. It is. Oh, right. Dear Evan Hansen.
I forgot how the show works. I thought this was a regular movie podcast. This isn't my Stephen King one.
No, this is not. No, this is the other one.
King's Crib.
Yeah, this is the other podcast you do.
Oh,
yeah. This is the musical one.
Right.
Yeah.
King's Tunes. Where we only discuss Carrie the musical. Which exists. Look it up.
I don't need...
It was off-Broadway.
I don't need to know. Also, yeah. I found out that the Lightning Thief book was made into a musical.
Yeah.
I don't, like, it, this is not new news.
And all the Gen Z loved it.
I'm sure they did, but, like, go and listen to it. It's...
Bad?
It's something. I mean, the movies were bad already, and then...
Did you read the books?
Yeah, I loved the books.
Books were great!
Yeah, I love reading books.
Yeah!
Who doesn't love a good book?
I love those Percy Jackson books, but the Lightning Thief musical. Not. Anyway, we're not here to talk about The Lightning Thief.
No, we're here to talk about Dear Evan Hansen, the movie.
Yeah.
Which is... I don't... Okay.
This is going to be a complicated finale episode.
This is complicated, and it's nuanced.
Well, first of all, I think this is the first musical we've talked about that's still in theaters.
Yes.
So
in theaters now.
In theaters now. Is it not on streaming anywhere, is it?
No.
So this is, hey, if you're not vaccinated, go get that shot and then go see this movie.
Or just go see the movie in general. Like, you know, at this point in time.
We can have our vaccine talk later.
Right.
But
This is not going to be like the reviews. At least I hope not, because I know we've talked about this.
Yeah,
and like, it's not news, and I don't think anyone is surprised at this point. Like, people are angry at this movie,
yeah,
and I don't quite understand. And we're gonna talk through where some of that might come from.
Yeah, because this is one of your favorite musicals, right?
Yeah, this is really up there.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna get it out of the way early. Like, I did not dislike this movie.
Yeah.
Was it perfect? Absolutely not. Would I compare it to Cats?
Oh, God,
like
no.
Many reviewers have?
No.
I don't... That's tough.
Cats was an abomination that should never have been made. Dear Evan Hansen has good music and, for the most part, good acting.
Right.
With, in my opinion... I also like this film. My opinion has bad cinematography. Ben Platt is overacting in a lot of cases, but boy can that man ugly cry.
He can, oh my God. It's tough to watch.
Just, I no one would want to see this, but when he's like, and you know exactly the scene I'm talking about, where he like collapses on the knees front of the tree. And,
yes, like many of the scenes though, and like where it's found, yeah. It's just like, it's tough to watch.
Right.
Ever watch a grown man cry?
Which, like, it's so confusing to me with Ben Platt, because he's done screen acting before.
Yes.
I'm going to bring up a very brief TikTok trend.
Oh, God, please don't.
No, it's fine. It's okay. It's it's topical.
Okay.
People will try to, whether lip-sync to a scene or a song, using, quote, scene acting versus stage acting.
Oh.
To show the difference of, like, if I was in a Broadway musical, I'd be acting to the back row.
Right.
Whereas in the screen, screen acting, film acting, everyone's in the front row. There's no bad seat in a movie theater.
Right. And so, like, that gives you space to be, like, more nuanced, and, like, you can do little tiny facial things.
Right.
And, like, you can react in very small ways that can convey a lot, as opposed to if you're on stage, everything you do, you have to do big so that everyone can see that that's how you're reacting.
Right.
And Ben, for some reason, took the stage, lifted his stage performance and put it into this film without the singing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can sing in this. The soundtrack version of from the movie is better.
Yes.
But, like, in the film, this frustrates me because, like, what other reason did you have other than the fact that, what is it, his dad produced it? To have him in the film, if he's not going to give the same performance he gave in his Tony Award-winning rendition on stage.
Now, there also was a bit of controversy with this film, where people were criticizing, when the trailer first came out, how old Ben Platt looked. Because they have him in this, like, curly-haired mop of a wig.
Uh-huh.
And he...
He looks younger with his regular hair. Like,
right. Like, they aged him up somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas one review we read was like, he looks like a journalist trying to infiltrate a high school.
Right.
Like, he looks like a narc.
It looks like 21 Jump Street. Like, he is infiltrating a high school.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping, and I tried to defend it at the beginning when we talked about the trailer and when it came out and, like, our hopes for this.
Mm-hmm.
I was really hoping that he wouldn't come across as old as he looked in the trailer.
And he 100% did.
And it's really tough, but he did. Like, he did and he does.
Yeah.
In their attempt to make him look young, he looks older. And someone somewhere along the way gave him some really bad direction.
Yeah.
Where I can only imagine what they said was, hey, you need to convey that you are essentially the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
In this, he is always slouched over and hunched over in the least comfortable way possible.
And
his arms are at a constant T-Rex pose.
Yeah.
Like, they're always just really, like, you know, bent 90 degrees in front of him, and his hands are always, like, fiddling while he's all hunched over. And I'm like, I know you're trying to make him look spindly and, like, really nerdy and everything.
Right.
But this is almost a caricature of someone with massive social anxiety.
Right.
He could have, and he had the ability to play this role with a phenomenal amount of nuance, like he did in The Politician.
Right. He was great in The Politician.
Yes. Especially, like, the end of season one, like, when he's incredibly depressed and he, like,
Singing in the piano bar. Yes. And, like, yeah.
He could have nerded that up a little bit, gave a little bit more anxiety to that performance, and it would have been good. And I would have been okay with it.
It also doesn't help that he does a Naruto run.
Oh my God.
Everywhere.
Arms back, bent forward 45 degrees.
Just his, and his hands looks, are loose. Yeah,
loose.
So they're floppy, but they're also stiff.
He looks like he's taking on, like, Area 51. Like, he's...
Remember that?
Yeah. That's a throwback. Like, he's running. He's gonna take it on. And so, like, apart from his performance, though, because I could talk about this, and, like, I could talk about this all night long, but I really don't want to.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of good in this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what we can do is, like, we'll briefly talk about its history, because this is fresh, right? Like, this started in 2016 was the first stage show?
Yes.
So first stage show is 2016, and it has a movie by 2021. So I think this is probably one of the quicker turnarounds.
Oh, yeah.
Next to The Prom.
I remember seeing reviews for this on some of the Broadway YouTubers mm-hmm. that I follow, and then when they're like, we're making it into a movie, I was like, that was quick.
That was fast. Like,
yeah.
But somehow, at the same time, it was like, well, it's about time, right? I mm-hmm. think this was always destined to be a movie.
Of course.
Especially with, like, the message that it's trying to give,
mm-hmm.
the fact that it masquerades as, like, a uplifting tale, which is kind of false advertising.
Absolutely.
And I think is something that ultimately hurt this film is if you go back and watch the trailer, they obviously use the signature song from the production. It's mm-hmm. like, and they present it as this very, like, uplifting, heartwarming tale.
And it's not.
And it's not. And so if you go into this movie like our peers did, thinking that this was going to be a good way, like a good uplifting tale.
Good feel-good film.
Feel-good film of high schoolers coming together to battle, you know, depression and suicide.
Wrong. So for those who have not seen Dear Evan Hansen, this is their first review of Dear Evan Hansen. How would you spoilers abound. First
and,
of all,
like, we'll walk through the plot and okay. we'll walk through the movie. Okay. I think for this one.
Okay, yeah. But overall, I think the movie is hurt. And what's so confusing is it's written by the same people who wrote the Broadway version. The Broadway book and lyric writer and songwriter were also the ones for the film.
Yes.
So that's a little confusing.
Which is why I think this movie survives in my head.
Mm.
Right? Like, I think that's what keeps this film afloat and mm-hmm. makes me not hate it.
Yeah.
And I had used this analogy earlier with you, but, like, imagine if Harry Potter did not have really hands-on involvement from J.K. Rowling in the filming.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been completely different.
Or Suzanne Collins with The Hunger Games.
Right. Or Star Wars without Dave Filoni. Like,
a little bit different there, but yeah.
So, right, but, like, same because, premise. You know, these people have the nuance, they understand the story and what they were trying to convey in the original. And so I think they kept this film together and they kept mm-hmm. the story largely the same. Mm-hmm. For those of you familiar with the Broadway show and then having seen the musical, there are some differences. Songs are cut, we'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
The ending is a little bit different, but not really.
Yeah.
And so I think largely the plot is intact. And so I'll defend this again at the end, but I will stand by what I told you after we walked out of the theater.
Yes.
Which is, if you do not like this movie, you do not like the musical.
I don't...
If you hate this movie, and if you don't like this at all, it's because you dislike the story. You don't like, yes. You don't like the musical. Because this is very, very similar plot-wise, plot beats. Yeah. They hit all of the story points. They mm-hmm. add some songs that, you know, I wish they didn't have to take out songs, but whatever. This is Hollywood. Like, but they still contribute. They still push right. the narrative forward instead of being suddenly ashy. Like,
I will say that having seen the stage version. Have you seen the stage version? Yeah. Like, having seen the stage version, the way they stage this show, it's so minimalist. It is one of the more minimalist Broadway shows I've seen. Relies very heavily on projection, very minimal sets. Like, there's a kitchen table,
mm-hmm.
there's a bed,
couch,
a bed, a couch,
some tables, like
like a a copier,
mm-hmm.
which is integral to the plot, yeah. or a printer, a computer.
Right.
Like, there's, it's very, you could put on, most people could put on Dear Evan Hansen with the stuff they already have in their house.
Right.
Like, you don't need to prop shop much for this show.
Because it's a very grounded, contemporary musical.
Right. And it's a musical of ballads.
Yes.
Which...
You don't need a barricade for this to, like, no. to add to the spectacle, right? The spectacle right. of the musical is the singing and the story.
Right.
Exclusively.
Which I think... I will say this, just thinking about it as we've been talking, I think this show just operates better as a stage show.
Yes.
I think it operates better as a stage show. I think there you would have taken a very, very, very talented group of people to make this a successful film.
I think this film was... and we'll, like,
I think it's the best we could have gotten.
I think it's the best we could have gotten to an extent, but I think mm-hmm. this movie was almost killed in the editing room.
Yes.
And I yes. like I think they probably, as they were making it, thought that they had gold. They're this like, was we did an amazing job with this.
This is 100% Oscar bait.
Yes. And then when they saw the finished cut, I think they were like, wait a second.
We can't go back now.
And I also have like another theory that we had talked about is that halfway through the filming of this show, they were like, oh wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like to think that Stephen Chbosky, who directed this, got halfway through principal production.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's feeling good. They're like, this is so uplifting. We're doing a good thing. Everyone's patting each other on the back. Right. Like, we're gonna change the conversation around mental health,
right.
depression, and suicide in this country amongst teens and right. younger populations. And then they got halfway through, and they're like, wait a second.
Oh.
I think we may have made a mistake.
Yeah.
Because this story doesn't connect well with what we want the feeling of it to be. Yeah. We want it to be this uplifting story,
mm-hmm.
but this is not an uplifting story. This is a yeah. story about the trials and tribulations of being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story that about working through mental health, mental illness, and what it means to like find yourself and like the lengths we will go to find ourselves. Mm-hmm. and find our place in society, in high school, and in the social order, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this, like, the means in which we go through to get there is not one of uplifting, like, I feel great about this. It's no. dark, it's gritty, and so that led to some creative choices.
Yeah.
To kind of try to reframe this,
mm-hmm.
where they cut some songs.
Yeah.
To make it feel less bad, right? So they cut Good For You, mm-hmm. so the audience doesn't, so we don't see an overt portrayal of the anger towards Evan,
which
we see subtle, and we see, I think, more human. But I don't think, I honestly think, in retrospect, having seen the film, that Good For You would have felt out of place in this movie.
Do you think so?
I think it would have felt out of place. Because we don't see the animosity that Evan's mom has towards him.
Mm.
That is built up a lot more in a more prevalent manner in the stage show.
Mm-hmm.
She's frustrated with him. She's angry mm-hmm. because they're living these two parallel lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for them to intersect, and she's trying to be a great mother.
Right.
And now she's seeing, obviously, her son is living it up with this other more wealthy family. Like, mm-hmm. she's upset.
For sure.
But she's not angry.
No.
Which is a big part of Good For You, right? The
yeah.
dad, in this case the stepdad,
mm-hmm.
isn't, like... that angry because he isn't as emotionally involved in all of this.
Right.
He's more there to support his wife.
Right.
And Amy Adams, God bless her, I adore her, and I love how she played this character, but in the movie, she is much more kind of like understanding she's the soft handed, like the soft touch.
Yeah.
You know, she's the hopeful person.
Yeah.
There's nothing that her character did in the film that would have made me believe that she could have sung Good For You and been mad.
Yeah.
I don't think the temperaments matched up in any way, shape, or form for that song to be a part of this. Yeah. And so I think they cut it. I think mm-hmm. they're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's not show the animosity.
Which, honestly, I think it would have worked.
I don't know.
I think it would have worked.
I no one's angry. The only person that has been established to be, like, angry and can sing in that way would have been Zoe. She would have been the only one right. that I would have believed.
Yeah.
Could have sang that song and I would have actually felt something from it. The rest of them I'd be like, this is not your character.
I mean,
betrays who your character has been this whole time.
I mean, well,
the Murphy family in this movie is very quiet. They're not boisterous, they're not loud, they're not like angry people.
Which I think was a mistake.
I think it's more realistic.
I mean,
I don't know.
But I think musicals don't necessarily need to be realistic.
This one did.
I don't think so.
So I don't think you can have a movie that is lauded for being a realistic, like, gritty mm-hmm. take on mental health,
right?
Suicide.
Yeah.
I don't think you can not do a realistic take of that. I think it has to be, or else it betrays the message of the story. I think the movie had to go this direction because, like, I'll give them this, right? I think the Murphy family responded very realistically, and
yes.
the acting conveyed that. And
yes, they responded yes. realistically, but you can also have a song that's just their raw emotions speaking out. I mean, that's what a lot of musical numbers are, you know. I think you can have that. And you can have that kind of, like, on the outside, they're just like, you know, you need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go. And you can have that. And then you can have that Good For You and have it be like how they did, you know, I'll Sing No Requiem, you
mm-hmm.
know, where it's individual characters. You can have that as their emotions towards him.
I could see it.
And I think that would have provided a little more catharsis. Because I think where the stage version, by leaving out Good For You, in the stage version, we get the Good For You at the end, or near the end of Act Two, and it makes sense that it's like this person who, sure, got caught up in the wrong actions mm-hmm. at the beginning, but had hundreds of opportunities to course correct. And even after he collected himself, decided not to course correct, he gets his comeuppance with everyone basically shunning him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the movie, I didn't get that. And I think that you would have seen a bigger outcry. You would have seen, the movie already used like fake videos. If they had some kind of, you know, local news coverage, this would definitely make a local news story, in my opinion. The events of Dear Evan Hansen, you know.
Problem. Yeah.
Because, you know, here's the Connor Foundation, and one of the founding members of the Connor Foundation, lied.
Mm-hmm.
The whole premise of the Connor Foundation is a sham. Not to say the work of the Connor Foundation is bad. It's a good foundation. But what this person has done is bad. And then they get that moment of realization at the end of, like, they've learned their lesson. They're going to move on. Today will be a good day for them
mm-hmm.
because they've learned their lesson. Whereas in this, it almost, and having the prolonged bit where he's sharing the video from Connor's therapy, which I get the intention of it being sweet and everything, but it's a group therapy session, and it's a video that features not just Connor but other people in that therapy session.
So now we're getting into the ethics of whether or not you should record therapy sessions, which, like,
you shouldn't.
You shouldn't, but, like, I don't think that's the point here, right?
But they could have done anything else, and they went with that route. I think that's another problem.
Is it problematic? Yes, I don't know if that's a problem as it relates to the story, because that's a space where Connor was
right,
being him true, his like his true.
Sure, but that doesn't make Evan's actions any less.
Sure, but I mean, Evan didn't record the therapy session, so.
No, but someone did, and Evan chose to share it.
He showed it to his parent, the parents.
Still.
So he showed it to the parents because the whole time he's been telling them lies and fake stories. He's
right.
been creating a fake image of their child.
Right.
He gave them a true piece of their child.
Right.
Which is, right. Like,
but
I don't think that's
that
problematic.
But one that their child clearly didn't want to share.
So, I don't think clearly. It's not like Connor had the video.
No,
his
but.
Peer had it.
But even then.
Yeah, I don't know. So like I think that's something that was done in their decision to try to course correct to
which I think was a mistake
to reduce some of the perception of what occurred.
Yeah.
Right? And like another example would have been like cutting the song Disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Because Disappear is one of my favorite songs from the show, but if you read into it, it does appear as though Connor is giving and like affirming the decision to do what Evan is doing.
Right.
So like
that makes sense to cut that one.
That makes sense, like cut that one. So all to say, like, this is how they ended up where they ended up.
Yes.
We still end in the same place.
Yes.
And I think we end in an okay place, right? It's essentially where the story ends. It's the destination. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't end in, you know, a hyper-problematic way, right? If
no.
he ended up with Zoe,
that's
I would have walked out of the theater. I would have been like, okay, now that's fucked up.
Right. Like, if the Murphys were like, oh, that's okay.
That's okay, I get it.
Anyway, you want some gluten-free apple pie?
Like, I get it, dude. I get it. Things are crazy.
It's like, I get it. You're struggling with anxiety. I do crazy shit when I'm anxious, too. Like,
right. These things happen. Like, okay,
right.
That betrays the story.
Right.
When in real, like, in the movie, we get the same story.
Right.
Now, I think, like, walking through this, they cut out. My biggest issue with the film, honestly, is that it doesn't do justice to one of the biggest parts of the stage show, which is
the baseball glove.
Yes. Yes. In a way, yes.
Yeah.
So, like, the trials and tribulations of parenting. So,
yeah.
The musical stage show opens with Anybody Have a Map, which is a song being sung in parallel by both of the mothers about
mm-hmm.
their children, saying essentially, like, I'm a parent. I'm kind of making this shit up as I go along. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do this. My child is super depressed. Like, I'm trying to put on a smile for him to help him get through the day.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I'm trying my best. So Evan's mom is saying just, like, hey, things are tough, but, like, maybe have your kids sign the cast. Like, that will be fun. And then when he doesn't respond the way she would have liked, she's just like, Jesus Christ. Like, internally, she's just like, okay, another attempt. I failed. Whatever. Like, I'm trying.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a theme throughout this entire show,
mm-hmm.
is like as Evan is trying to help his Connor's parents reconcile the death of their child.
Yeah,
you know, they're dealing with a lot, having lost a child, and
mm-hmm.
the grief and the idea of just like, could I have done anything to have prevented this? Like,
right.
That's what they're overcoming.
Right.
Evan's mom is like, I don't even know what's happening with my child. Like,
yeah.
I'm working my ass off to, like, provide for my family.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, like, I'm losing touch with my kid, whatever.
Right.
So, like, they cut Anybody Have a Map, which is disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because
it, like, sets the stage for the stage show of, like, this is going to be a tale of folks trying their best.
Yeah.
And then they also cut Break in a Glove.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, if you had to say, like, I need you to cut one song from
yeah.
Dear Evan Hansen, I'd be like, it's gotta be Breaking a Glove.
Yeah.
But that also is unfortunate because that, you know, diminishes and takes away the story that they're trying to tell mm-hmm. of Connor's father, you know, right. and his issues with trying to be a father, and like he wanted
being a stepfather.
Being a stepfather in the movie, mm-hmm. Of like, hey, I try, like, this is the life I wanted for my child, but it's not mm-hmm. what he wanted, so, like, did I push him in the wrong direction? Mm-hmm. Hey, here's a new, now I have a bonus child.
Right.
Would you like this glove?
And it's even problematic with the Murphys of how they've almost adopted Evan,
mm-hmm.
even though they know he has a mom and a dad, and it's, or not a dad, sorry, and a yeah. mom, has a dad, but out of the picture, but like the Murphys and Connor's mom play a really good foil to each other,
mm-hmm.
as you mentioned with Anybody Have a Map, where it's, you know, they're both of them are trying to do what they think is best,
yes,
and both are kind of, at least the moms are kind of stubborn in their approach.
Yes. And Amy Adams, so I see what you're saying. I think Amy Adams is, in this case, she's being greedy. And I use that word cautiously, because her greed is being driven by her grief.
Right, it's, I lost a son. Hello, new son.
Hello, person who's going to fill that gap. Person mm-hmm. who apparently knew my child. So I didn't know my child, apparently, while he was alive.
But this one did.
This one did.
So I will live vicariously through him yes. and learn about my child.
Right. And so while what she did wasn't... I don't think her intention was to kidnap a child.
Oh, God, no. That's all I'm saying. No,
or,
no, no.
Or to be like, I'm stealing someone else's child. It that is the perceived outcome to Julianne's Moore's Heidi. And so, like, what she does out of this, out of grief, mm-hmm. of, like, I lost my child.
And so we see that she's not processing grief in mm-hmm. a healthy way.
Right.
We see that, you know, even Evan is not processing grief.
Oh, Evan's literally the... incredibly problematic things that he does. And I think mm-hmm. we had a good conversation about this after the movie. Is, I think it's easy to jump on this, on Evan as a character, and be like, Evan is a bad person. Mm-hmm. I don't think Evan's a bad person. Evan does bad things, but that does not make him a bad person.
I think he is a horribly misguided, desperate individual.
Yeah.
Who, yeah, he does not, he doesn't, I'm going to misuse this phrase, but it's like he's not seeing the forest for the trees.
No, because he's falling through the branches after but he, like, jumped out of the tree.
He's seeing this. He has... So Connor's death, of course, is the catalyst for this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, would it make sense to start the plot discussion now? And just kind of... Because we've already kind of...
Yeah, so like as we... Yeah.
So the movie at least starts with...
Waving through a window.
Waving through a window, where we see Evan doing what his therapist is telling him to do. Write letters to yourselves, where mm-hmm. it starts with, Dear Evan Hansen.
Today's going to be a good day.
Right. You know, and it's him talking about how he feels like he's waving through a window, but no mm-hmm. one can see him.
Right.
He's, you know, and in many ways, I think we can all relate to that feeling.
Right.
Of, like...
On the outside, always looking in. Like
I want to be where... It's that
the people are.
He wants to see. Wants to see them waving, waving around with those. What do you call them?
Hands. Right, and like yeah. So. I liked this number. I was This is the perfect example of why this movie threw me off, and what my grievances were with the film in general. I like the music. Music's good. As we've talked before, like when Broadway musicals get a movie, the music is always the best part, typically, because now they have all of the money and they have the full orchestra.
Exactly.
So the music's really good.
Yeah.
They do a lot of really odd cuts.
Yes.
That they do not repeat other times in the movie.
No.
And so you're, except like one other time, and it's so off-putting. When he's like, tap, 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 and like every time he says tap, it's a different like camera angle. And yes. They just never do this again.
No.
Which is really, from a cinematography standpoint, is really frustrating.
It's jarring.
It's jarring, and it takes you out of it, because The rest of the film is filmed very much in a almost like document, like fly on the wall-esque, right?
It's, as someone, I'll agree with this statement from a review I read, it's filmed like a Lifetime movie.
Yeah, right. Like, it's not like
broad,
we're doing
wide shots.
Right.
Nothing special.
Crazy Dutch angles, right? It looks like it was potentially filmed on an iPhone, right? Like, all on tripods, right? There's no shaky cam. Like, it's all stable, you know, still shots. Which is okay, because it grounds you in, which is good for, you know, a show that is mostly just ballads. But when you introduce random jarring shake shots like this, it pulls you out of it, and you're like, okay, so now we're not consistent.
Along with that, in terms of jarring, I think another thing that this movie did very poorly is a lot of movie musicals will have, sometimes they'll have like a soundtrack that goes along with it, like a backing track for certain scenes. I know Chicago has one, The Producers for sure has one, Into the Woods has one. Well, Into the Woods is more likely a Miz, but anyway, there's typically, even, so take The Producers for instance, there are many scenes in that show that before a musical number is sung, there's no music that's playing, but typically there's lead-in. Typically, there is some kind of build-up into the number. That does not happen in this movie.
It happens very, very sparingly.
And it literally feels like we're watching a drama. And now we're singing.
I think the best example of this is going to be For Forever. And, like, to be clear, like, we'll talk about Four Forever in a second. Another issue with this movie is that the first half hour, there's waving through a window, and then nothing but dialogue for the next, like, 30 minutes.
I forgot this was a musical.
Right, I genuinely did, right?
I was like, oh, right, this is Dear Evan Hansen.
Right. And then after that, it all comes hard and fast. Like, every single scene is a musical number, which is fine, because it's a musical. But, like, there's a lot of plot that has to happen, and they really took their time establishing what is occurring.
Yeah.
And establishing that Evan is alone. He has his friend, and damn, is his friend funny. Oh, my God.
Sorry. Family friend.
Family
friend.
So every musical typically has like a character,
like a plucky sidekick.
And there's usually a character that we as the audience are intended to kind of like attach ourselves to and like view ourselves as in the plot. Like if I was in this musical, I'd be that guy.
Right.
He is very much that guy. Yeah. Like Evan does the shit, and his friend's just like, wait, are you kidding me?
Like you're not actually gonna fake emails between you and a dead kid.
Right. And he does. And he does. So he's absolutely hilarious. But like there's a lot of the plot that happens. And there's one thing that I wanna talk about, because I think it's important. So like when Connor dies and his parents come to the school to speak to Evan, I think this starts down this path of the debate of, like, is Evan a good person? Because there are many times, and even more in the musical, but there are a lot of times in this movie where Evan is going to do the right thing.
Right.
He is going to do the right thing, and then he's caught up in this instance of, like, holy hell. Like, you know, Connor passed away, in his suicide note, he wrote it to you, like, hey, here this is, because you guys were best friends.
Right.
And here's this kid who's supposed to be 15 years old.
Looking like their contemporary.
Right. And being like, and he tries. Like, he really does try, and I did feel for him in this scene.
Yes.
Because if you were sitting there across, you know, from some kid's parents of someone in your class who just died by suicide. And they're like, hey, we didn't think you had any friends. Mm-hmm. Our dead child didn't have any friends except you. Like, to sit there and have the emotional maturity and development to be like, nope, your child was actually alone. I think it begins this trail of instances in which, like, he wants to do the right thing, and he shows that he wants to do the right thing, mm-hmm. but he is pushed in directions, mm-hmm. and he allows himself to be pushed in directions, to be clear, but he is pushed in directions mm-hmm. that he does not want to go, nor did he intend to go.
Yeah.
And so I think the problematicness of this narrative is that he doesn't course correct, and then he very much gets to a point where he's just like, okay, well, now I'm actually benefiting from it, so...
And then it gets to the point where we're now in too deep.
Yeah, we're in too deep.
As, you know...
I'll let you know when we're in too deep.
Right. We needed a Max Bialas talk in this movie. Just tell him at the start, in too deep!
We're in too deep. In too deep! Yeah. And so, like, Evan is a character who wants to do the right thing.
But he also has internal motivation. He's lonely.
He's lonely.
He himself is... I think he, in many ways, I think he kind of sees... Potentially... That's one way to interpret it, I guess. Potentially sees himself in Connor.
To an extent.
Of, like, I don't want to end up like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is where the misguidedness comes in. Where he's kind of like, I'm going to do what I can. And I'm going to... Yeah. Words are hard. Words fail. He's going to get the girl he has a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, the actress they have playing Zoe
mm-hmm.
and Ben Platt,
it do feel a little Akko-Takko. I don't think his motivations truly shift. So, like, in our field and in life, we talk a lot about, like, intent versus impact.
Mm-hmm.
His intent until probably 3/4 of the way through mm-hmm. is not to use this family and to use the platform, right? I don't think it is until probably until Only Us where he really mm-hmm. starts to see the pros of what he's doing.
Yeah.
For himself, like what he's right. getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, jumping to For Forever, he is uncomfortable. He's almost as uncomfortable as I am. As he stands in the dining room of the Murphys over dinner and tells a story of when him and Connor went to the orchard. And
climbed the tree.
And climbed the tree and fell where he broke his arm. And, like, he's uncomfortable during this. He does not want to be doing this.
And so this is, I think, the worst shot song in the whole movie.
Yes.
Because you have Ben Platt
mm-hmm.
using his stage acting, big, wide mm-hmm. mouth.
And
big
there he goes!
And just, like, looking down the barrel of the camera.
Uh-huh.
Like he's gonna eat us.
Uh-huh. And then...
and then it cuts to the different parents. And, like, you have the dad who's just like... Wow.
You can see his, like, jaw quiver just a tiny bit as he's just like, I don't know what to do with this information.
Right. Amy Adams is enraptured beyond belief.
She's in awe.
She's seeing God.
She has seen the face of God. She's just like...
And Zoe is just like...
What?
This is not my brother.
Right.
This...
I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
And as he's standing there with his T-Rex arms... And doing his best Hunchback of Notre Dame impression at the head of the table, going just like racing toward the tallest tree, and he's like screaming at three people who are just trying to eat dinner. None of whom
no
are eating.
No one eats dinner in the whole scene.
No, I don't think they actually. I would have lost my taste. I would have lost my appetite.
Yeah,
I would have been like, I'm good. Push plate away. Like,
yeah,
that was weird. A lot of emotions occurring in this space as well. And so this scene, I think, also in this song in particular, is the perfect example of not having a lead-in to the music. Because they're like, tell us a story about Connor. And he's just like, End of May or early June.
Right! Like, it almost seems, because the music itself does not kick in right away.
No.
And so it's like...
A slow ramp would have helped you.
It'd be like if you were like, Adam, how was your day? And I was just like, I saw my friends. We had some lunch.
Right.
And it's like, Adam, why are you singing?
Right. Part of me, like...
And then I went to my office and did some spreadsheets.
Part of me genuinely was expecting Zoe to look over, like, and look oddly.
Right.
Kind of like in a fourth wall-esque breaking way, just like, why is he singing?
It's just a recent example. I just watched Little Shop of Horrors again last night.
Oh my god.
And I thought it was the director's cut. It was not the director's cut. I was very upset. But anyway, Jim Belushi comes in near the end when Audrey and Seymour kick into Suddenly Seymour again.
Mm-hmm.
He says, if you two kids would stop singing for one moment. Like, I was expecting that from Zoe. Of like, why are you singing? Like,
why are you
singing? We asked you a simple question.
Right.
Why are you singing?
Right. And then it, like, makes you think, like, it, you know, he is singing. But now, I know that it's a musical, and it's okay for them to be singing, but this is also, like, if it's meant to be, you know, them hearing this as him just talking regularly, he's telling an awful story.
Yeah! Right! Right!
Like, why does he keep saying for forever? Like... For forever. What, like, what?
Well, hang on. Let's hold the lyrics.
Well, no, because it's, you know, all we see is sky for forever. It's just like, but it's not for forever. Like, that's an odd way to tell a story. What if I was just like, Adam, today I went on a bike ride for forever. I rode down the trail for forever.
Right. Like, if they ask this question, end of May or early June, this picture perfect afternoon we shared.
We shared.
Drive the winding country road. Grab a scoop it all the mode.
Which I also really like how they do it in the film too, because Evan doesn't know jack shit about this family.
No.
He doesn't know anything. And so, like, they're feeding him information. He's just like, end of May or early June. It's picture perfect afternoon we share. Drive to the country winding country road. Grab a scoop it, and they're
isn't
like,
isn't it near that ice cream place? Oh yeah, a la mode.
And he's just like, ha, at a la mode.
Right. Like, and the problem, I think, with... This goes back to Ben's overacting.
Yes.
It's...
He's like, so eager.
He's too eager.
Well, I would be too. Like, to be fair, if you were sitting in this dining room spitballing to a deceased child's
right.
family about memories you air quote shared...
But you would think the way he's overacting would clue them in that, like, oh, he's making this up.
Right, because...
That's the problem with the overacting.
If this was spoken, it would just be like, grab a scoop at,
Oh, what was
at,
it?
At,
What was it? Oh, was it all mode?
Yeah, all
mode. And then we're there.
Where are we again?
An open field that's framed with trees.
You mean the orchard? Yeah. The orchard.
Right, like, it makes sense if it's spoken, but doing it through, having spoken dialogue be then picked up by singing.
Mm-hmm. All of this could have been fixed.
This movie.
Had they just given a 10-second musical prelude. Quietly rising
right
behind Amy Adams' voice.
Right. A musical lead in.
Give me two bars.
Like something.
So he has the thing with the family and whatever. And so now he's like, yeah, there were like also like more letters that we wrote.
Oh, we have so many emails.
We have so many emails, and his mom's just like, oh my god, really? I would love to read them. And he's just like, stupid.
Right.
This is the best part of the, like, one of the best parts.
Sincerely Me is my favorite song in the show.
Because it's
so over the top.
If the whole movie embodied what spirit and energy there was in Sincerely Me, mm-hmm. this would have been a perfect rendition, a perfect adaptation.
If the whole Broadway musical was like Sincerely Me, you could have had a pretty good dark comedy on your hands.
At that point in time, you almost would have had to have like made it a true dark comedy insofar as like Evan actually murdered Connor to get in with the family. Like that would have been the appropriate ending had all of the story been Sincerely Me.
I think you could have had the plot still happen, but have Evan do an I Want song.
I want to bang their daughter.
Right.
I want to throw a ball with that dad.
Right.
And mama's pie. So Sincerely Me, I thought it was really clever. It was great because it was like what I imagined this would look like. So like, yeah. If you had asked me beforehand what Sincerely Me would have looked like on film, mm-hmm. this is exactly what it would have been.
Right.
Because they go back and forth as they're writing these emails.
And it's the actor who played Connor, who also was the understudy to Ben Platt
yes.
in the original Broadway cast.
So like, they go back and forth on, you know, what they're writing. And they're like, mm-hmm. no, don't write this. And so when they're like, no, don't write that. Like, it like rewinds.
Like, I've got to tell you, life without you has been hard.
Hard?
Life has been bad. Bad? Life has been rough.
Ginky. And it just like keeps like kind of rewinding with Connor singing mm-hmm. these lines. I'm like, it's fun. It's like a buddy, like teen, you know, coming of age story. I'm like, this is fun. Yeah. This is where I had hope restored, because for the first 30 minutes of the movie, I was just like, I'm laughing more than I probably should.
And I think that's the problem with this movie, is that multiple times in the theater we saw with two people who had no idea what Dear Evan Hansen was,
mm-hmm.
there were more laugh scenes yes. or laughing moments than the director probably had intended.
Yes, and part of me like made me think back to like seeing it live, and I'm just like, I wonder if a lot of these laughing, if it's like the same amount of laughing total, but now I'm just laughing uncomfortably at the situation.
I don't remember much laughing at all when I saw it. During this song,
yeah,
yes. But in general, not really.
Well, you laugh at the relationship between Evan and...
And Jared. Like, and,
yeah.
Having those moments, that's... Yes. Right.
And that's kind of like what I'm talking about, but like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, anywho, Sincerely Me was great.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, okay.
10 out of 10.
I have some hope for where this is going.
Yeah.
And I think it honestly gets better from here. I really do. I think the first 30 minutes and the last 30 minutes are a little tough.
Yeah.
But it's very much like a kind of like a peak. Like we're going up towards greatness here.
Oh, by the way, November 23rd, Cats is coming to town.
No, I'm good. I'm really good.
You just said that you would see it on Broadway. You said that earlier in this episode.
Broadway is not Dayton, Ohio.
It's the
national. I would see it
it's
on
the Broadway. National touring company.
We'll look at tickets later. So like, now we're moving into
we're gonna see Cats.
Also, I think one of the most impactful songs of the movie, Requiem.
Yeah,
Requiem is really well done in this.
It is
because you have all three of the Murphys battling through their own unique situations.
Mm-hmm.
You have the mom being like, I struggled with what I perceived my child to be, but mm-hmm. like apparently he was kind of like happy and maybe I'm not a bad mom. You have mm-hmm. Zoe, who's like, I fucking hated Connor. Like right. he was bad. Like I had a lot of really bad experiences with him, and now I'm hearing that he was kind of a nice guy. Like, how do I reconcile this? Do I want to think ill of the dead? Like,
right.
And then you have the dad, who's just kind of caught in the middle of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the dad played this as if he was just kind of, like, frustrated that this was his lot in life. You know, mm-hmm. like, he tried with, you know, Connor, but Connor was never his son.
Right.
And so I wasn't sure how I was going to feel with it being, like, a stepdad and like, how this would play through.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked out really well.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was really surprised with the dad. In this, I think it was Danny Pino, I believe, because he like played this like very genuinely as, you know, I tried to provide for this kid much through the lens of like, I don't necessarily like, I don't know if I love him or not, but like I tried, like I've mm-hmm. raised him since he was, I think 3 is what they said. And you know, I'm trying to support my family through this.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Requiem, it's all of them trying to come to terms with what it means to, like, grief
yeah.
a loved one in different ways.
Yeah.
And this was really fucking good.
This had the same energy as that funeral episode from Ted Lasso.
Oh, my. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Also, as we said before, go watch Ted Lasso.
Never gonna give you up. And this was, like... After Sincerely Me, I was like, okay, we're back on track. Like, this is this is also how I pictured the song being sung.
Right.
And other than, there's one thing in the song that infuriates me.
Is it the Jeep?
It's the Jeep. So,
funny story. We saw this with someone who was a very proud Jeep owner.
Very proud
Jeep. And they were pissed. Yeah.
And so, there's a scene when Zoe is flooring it down a road.
In a two-door Jeep.
In a two-door Jeep. Some things about Jeeps is they are very top-heavy vehicles. They do not brake very well. and the two-door one is light enough where, like, honestly, if you turn fast enough, it's just going to roll. Yeah. And so she's driving a Jeep Wrangler, and she's flooring it down the road. And she sings, as she's singing, a really impactful line of just, like, that you were not the, like, how do I come to terms with the fact that you were not the monster that I knew. And when she sings this, like, that you were not the monster, slams on brakes. And then, like, this Jeep actually stops and, like,
on a dime.
On a dime. Just, which is not realistic. It's not realistic.
No.
Also, if you look at the odometer, it shows the gauge cluster. It shows her speeding wildly.
Yeah.
But she's in park, and then it shifts into reverse and then cuts back to her. So I like to think that they were filming, like, I don't even know how they filmed this.
Probably just moving a little, like, fake dial.
Yeah.
Probably a fake gauge.
Yeah, just, yeah.
And they didn't realize it was set in the park setting.
Yeah. As just, like, as an avid Jeep person, completely removed from the story.
I'm done.
I'm done.
Dear Evan Hansen, 0 out of 10.
Dear Evan Hansen, 0 out of 10. End of podcast. See ya.
This has been Stage Rant.
Yep.
Join us on Jeep Chat.
Jeep Chat. Requiem, really good. So then, like, we're moving through, they're trying to, like, we're figuring out the nuances of, like, okay.
Am I looking at Jeeps right now? Yes, I am. Sorry.
It's like, am I gonna tell you more fake stories about your dead child? Yes, I am. And then we have If I Could Tell Her. So this is the song where Evan specifically is comforting Zoe because she's like, yeah, this I hated this guy.
This song, I will be honest, even in the stage version, a little uncomfy.
It's uncomfy because this is where, like, we kind of maybe potentially lightly start down the road of, like, is he using this relationship to leverage a relationship with Zoe? Ish, kind of, but I feel like we're still in the zone of, like, he's trying to comfort them. Mm. But it's, and it's portrayed in the show and in the movie as well, that he starts intertwining his own emotions and observations into this. So that's why I think it telegraphs a little creepy.
Because he's portraying it as, this is what your brother,
yes,
the person that you were blood related to,
yeah,
thought about you.
Uh-huh.
But now...
And he's like, I really like your hair, like...
Right, like, let me pull up the...
Like, like, you do these cute things, you fill out quizzes in teen magazines, you scribble stars on your jeans, and so he's, like, listing the different things and, like, observations that, quote, Connor noticed about her that he then told Evan, but they're really just... They start out as general observations... And then they're, like, of things in the kitchen. And then it moves into, like, things that Evan has seen and appreciates about Zoe.
Right. We start with, you know, nothing like your smile, sort of subtle and perfect and real. Scribble stars on your cuffs of your jeans. Fill out those quizzes in those teen magazines. You know, all that. Things
it's really
that,
like verse 2 where things get weird.
Things that, like, anyone could notice.
Right.
You know, then it gets to... you looked really pretty.
I mean, really, it looked really cool.
Pretty cool with indigo streaks in your hair. Wondered how you learned to dance, like the rest of the world isn't there.
As it cuts to footage of him, like, watching her at, like, prom. And so the song is, like, If I Could Only Tell Her. Because that was what was, like, in the note that he wrote to himself. Because that's how he felt.
Right.
It's kind of icky, but like
it is icky.
But a true adaptation of the stage show.
I didn't say the stage show was less icky.
Yep.
It's icky. It's a gross song.
Yes. So
it's on par with me as the song from Oklahoma where they try to convince someone to commit suicide.
Yeah. No, thank you. So we have Alana, who I think is an interesting character in this.
Yeah.
So she is your, like, run-of-the-mill, super-involved high school student. And she now gets her own song.
Yeah.
So this is one of the two songs that were added to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is The Anonymous Ones, which is a good mental health awareness song.
Mm-hmm.
As they're sitting in, like, a park, as because essentially Evan's like, how do you do it? Like, you're so well put together, and, like, you've got it all going for you. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, nah, actually pop a lot of, I take a lot of pills.
And they start comparing, you know, their prescriptions.
Their
and
scripts,
that.
And, like, what do you take? This is what I take. Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, what are your thoughts on this song as it pertains to, like, fitting into this show?
It seems shoehorned.
Does it?
In my opinion.
Interesting.
I think it's a good song. I think it's a good standalone song. I think it would have made more sense to maybe have her sing this song at the memorial.
Yes. Would that have been the same, though, as a character moment? Because at that point, it's performative.
Or maybe it's her talking to Evan before he gives his speech.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah.
And then she busts into Anonymous Ones. Because that would make sense there. Kind of like, you're doing this not just for Connor. You're doing it for people like me.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Anonymous Ones.
Yeah.
Because having it be in the park, it kind of just seemed like... Because we get the sense that the two characters have not really known each other that long.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost turns into, hi, I've just met you. Anyway, here's all of my mental health baggage.
So, hold on. I might have to throw the flag on this.
Not saying that it's a bad move.
Because it's... to me, the song reads as ownership, right? Like, it's not saying, like, hey, I just met you. Let me unleash some drama on you. It's like, you just told me that you think I'm perfect, and, like, that's your perception of me. But I'm not, right? And, like, so I think this is one of those songs where I think it's a good standalone song. I think it tells a good message.
Yeah.
And, like, you go and read into it. It's like, you look at me and you think that I don't need piles of prescriptions to function naturally. Well, look again, you might catch it. There's this little moment after I smile where, like, my eyes fall to the floor and, like, we are the anonymous ones, right?
Yeah.
And, like, that's you fair. And I... struggle with this. And so I appreciate it. I think it fits. Do I like it more than Disappear? No, I do not. Because Disappear is just a good song. Like, yeah. Some great harmonies in there. But it to me, it's like it was their synonymous version of Disappear, where they could specifically address mental health and not the idea of disappearing.
Right. I take back my baggage comment.
I thought it was an interesting reframing of Disappear.
I still think it would have been better elsewhere in the show.
That's fair.
I think just having it be, again, this conversation between two people. Because, you know, there's not much at stake yet.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to... Again, if we assume that, like, most musicals kind of assume that, like, this is a conversation they're having.
Mm-hmm.
It gets really heavy when... I don't know. I think I would have put it elsewhere.
Hmm.
Good song.
That's fair.
Love the song. Would have put it elsewhere.
You know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's time for the assembly. It's time for the memorial service.
Hmm.
So, this was good. This was... You Will Be Found was good. I can't really complain with it. What is your problem with You Will Be Found?
Song-wise, it's good. Song, okay. Excellent song.
Okay.
Love the song.
Okay.
Great message. Powerful message.
Uh-huh.
The video collage of Connor's face.
That was a little rough, wasn't it?
That, I leaned over to you in the theater, I was like, Facebook, You Will Be Found.
And I said, Facebook, bitch, you've already been found.
Right, but it looked like a social media ad.
Yes.
It looked like there was... We stopped Dear Evan Hansen for, you know, upcoming social media, you know, service, whatever.
Yeah.
It just seemed so weird.
You know what it reminded me of?
What?
In hindsight, it reminds me of the original trailer for The Social Network.
Yes! Yes!
Yes, because it literally, it's all of the comments and everything, and it forms a collage of
right.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Right. Like, also the social network, excellent film.
I think I honestly like the trailer better than the movie.
Oh,
I think it's that trailer a masterclass, a masterclass, because it's to the weird, like this weird Nordic child choir cover of Creep by Radiohead, and it's so damn good.
That's
for
fair.
What's going on in the
yeah. Ooh. But anyway,
shakes.
That was the only cringy thing.
Okay,
like having the videos. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
You could have done that and then maybe have the collage moment be Alana and Evan and maybe Zoe watching them on their computers or whatever or on their phones. Like, that's fine. Because we kind of do that later on in the film.
Yeah.
With Evan's social media growing and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, do that. Cutting it and turning the whole screen into this, like, flyby of videos seemed so...
And also, it pulls you out, right? It's like the same. It's the same concept as the cuts earlier. Like, it's an unnecessary.
It's like the intern editor got you know, one day in the cutting room floor, and it's like, I know what I'm gonna do. I just learned.
I made a collage of all of my fraternity brothers.
Right. It's like, what did you do? I already made it part of the final cut.
Right.
What are you gonna do? Fire me? I'm an intern.
Right. Other than that, here... Oh, my gosh. I'm going to revive a game we haven't played in a long time. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's called... Is This a Thing in Public Schools?
Yeah.
So, to set the stage,
uh-huh.
We're at Connor's memorial service, held in the high school's auditorium.
Now, to be fair, I have had students in my high school pass away.
Okay.
While I was at a public high school.
Okay. Did you hold a all-school memorial service for them?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no.
Okay. So, hypothetically,
mm-hmm.
in that situation,
mm-hmm.
had someone come up to give a speech, a mm-hmm. fellow student,
mm-hmm.
and you know that they're pretty disheveled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they're distraught.
They look way older than they should be.
Yeah. If a random dude who looks like he's almost 30 comes up to the mic and he's been in your, like, classes all this whole time, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I think is wild... is I can't think of in my experience, or I've never been to a memorial where someone is like broken down as they've given a speech.
Or messed up.
Or messed anything. Up. Or made a mistake and people have pulled out their
phones. No, that is not a thing
of
public
like,
schools.
Ha ha, look at that emotionally disheveled nerd.
No, that's not a thing at public schools.
It's like, ha, he lost his friend.
That's
like,
not a thing anywhere. Those students are all sociopathic monsters.
I would agree.
Like, what's worse, how they filmed that scene, is all the students emotionlessly...
pull up their phones without anything. Any...
No, like, giggling.
No.
No, like, cringe. It's just, like, blank face.
Phone slowly up. Raises phone.
And then you just see other people looking around being like, I too will now pull out my phone as social peer pressure has taken a grip of my individuality. Like, it's so stupid. I'm sorry. That was so dumb. Because how they do it in, it's played for sympathy in the stage version.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are that audience
yep.
at the memorial. So when he is messing up, it's like, oh, buddy.
Oh,
like, oh no.
My God.
And like you can cringe is fine.
Yeah.
Like if you cringe, that's just natural. But to then pull out your phone? What? You're all monsters.
Like, y'all suck. Cool. Thank you for playing this episode's rendition of Is This a Thing in Public School?
It's not.
Okay, good to know, because I was about to get real judgmental real quick.
No.
Okay, so we have the assembly, things blow up. Long story short, they're really popular now. Connor's name is now part of the like public zeitgeist. Like, everyone is woke on this, and they want to start the Connor Project.
Right.
Which I think of in itself is fine. I don't really have an issue with that in any way, shape, or form. And they want to raise money to reopen...
The orchard.
The orchard that Evan made to be a big deal to...
Well, it was a big deal for the family.
To the family.
But then Evan took that and ran with it.
Yeah, he's like, this is my project now! You can't catch me! And so they're like, they want to raise money and stuff for the orchard. That's kind of cool. Evan and Zoe's relationship then becomes very, like, you know, this is kind of the turning point for me. Evan is invited over a lot more to the house. And one night, Zoe comes over to Evan's place and is like, hey, can we talk? Like, I kind of have feelings for you and stuff. Mm-hmm. But here's the deal. To be fair, if we're going to continue like this, our relationship can't just be about my dead brother.
Right.
And then we have the song Only Us, where we're like, oh, okay, so yes, Evan has received his first reward.
Yes. One finger on the monkey paw.
Only Us, I think it's a good song. I think it's cute. Like, it's a good, like, romantic song. Take out the context. It's a good song.
Oh.
Yeah, take out
the context. Out the context. It's a musical, Joe. It's all fucking context. I don't get to, like, they do that. In Les Mis.
Uh-huh.
It'd be like if right after the barricade and the aftermath we saw a wedding. Uh-huh. Oh, right, we do.
Wait a second.
But it's implied time has passed. It's implied.
It's not, though. It's not.
Still.
In the movie, he still has the cast.
It's still creepy.
He still has scars.
It is still a creepy song, in my opinion. I'm sorry.
Okay, so, like, now there's actually a relationship happening here between these two.
Based on false pretenses.
Based on very false pretenses. You know what this movie kind of reminded me of?
What?
The Blind Side. And it reminded me of kind of like the relationship, the brother-sister relationship between Michael Orr and the daughter in That Family. Because it's like, now that you're in my house, I'm like, is it creepy that, like, they would be in a relationship? Like, I don't know. I got weird Blind Side vibes. And Amy Adams made me think of Sandra Bullock. Anywho.
Those are not the vibes I got, but I see where you're coming from.
Thank you for affirming me on that. I know I'm not crazy on this topic specifically. In other areas, for sure. Anywho.
It's still creepy.
Yeah, no, it's still creepy.
Yeah.
It's creepy because
the thing is, okay, if you do remove the context, it's a very sweet song.
Uh-huh.
It's so wholesome.
Even from her perspective, it's a little odd because she's just like, hey, could we, like, you know, I recognize that you came into my life because of this.
Right.
But now I'm, like, really attracted to you. So, like, what if we forgot about all of that drama and, like,
just moved on.
And moved on.
Which is weird.
Together. And I'm like, that's not a healthy way to deal with trauma.
No. Like, if I had met someone because of proximity to a death, I might have a relationship with them in so much as I would check in on them around the anniversary of the death. Just be like, hey.
Right.
How you doing?
Or, like, I don't know. If someone was like a ghostwriter of my life, or, like, they were writing my novel or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, my photographer or something. I don't know. If I was the president, like, I don't know. If I were to pass away, it would be weird for someone to, like, initially go and talk to this person because of their part, like, proximity to me and the stories that they could tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like, by the way, like, what if we banged? Like,
right.
And so this begins, like, the downward descent. And so now Evan is kind of, like, getting caught in, like, some lies, specifically
with his mom.
Yeah. So she's like, hey, let's do Taco Tuesdays. And he's like, sure. And then they don't do Taco Tuesdays. And
so she's struggling because she's, like, a third shift nurse.
Yeah, she works hard.
And so you have that going on.
And their
with
lives
her.
Are like I said, run in parallel to each other, and it's right. hard for them to like see each other and yeah. whatever. So Evan's very much taking solace in Amy Adams,
right?
In mom,
right? And on top of this, it's mentioned briefly, but it does become a big issue later. There are discussions about getting Evan scholarships for college,
because otherwise he wouldn't have money to pay for it,
right?
And so then the Murphys invite over Mama Hansen for dinner.
What an awkward scene!
It's so uncomfortable.
In this, it's like awkward, it's intentional.
It so yes, intentionally awkward.
Yeah.
And in this dinner, they are like, "Hey, so we heard that Evan was struggling to like maybe find some money for school. So like we wanted to gift Evan the money that we set aside for Connor's college,"
which adds a whole other level of awkward,
which is a bunch of awkward. And like Heidi is a very proud woman,
right?
And so like she does not take this well.
She's like, we will manage,
we'll manage,
we got it.
I'm sorry if it was conveyed that we didn't have a lot of money, but we're fine.
Yeah.
I feel, in this instance, I feel awful for the Murphys. Because, like, this is, like...
I feel awful for both parties.
I feel bad for, like, both of them. But, like, imagine this. Like, you want to, like, help someone and, like, you know, come over for dinner. Like, let's be family friends and such. It's like, by the way, because I know they were close, like, we wanted to gift your son, like, free college. Like, we would like to do this to honor our deceased child. And then to have the person be like, no, this is a grave dishonor. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Traumatic. And so that puts a huge rift between Julianne Moore and Ben Platt. And then they argue outside as Julianne Moore gets a parking ticket, because apparently you can't street park in this neighborhood, even though it's a suburb, whatever. I thought that was
probably a gated community.
It is a gated community. You can still street park, like... When these families are hosting black tie galas, you think they're not valet parking in the street? Come on!
It's Maryland.
Does this take place in Maryland?
You didn't notice all the Maryland flags?
Oh my god, I didn't. Normally I'm really attuned to that.
Yeah.
I'm so embarrassed.
Takes place in Maryland.
Anywho, so like, a lot of things happen.
Yeah.
It's discovered that like, you know, the timeline doesn't really work out for when he says they went to the orchard and broke his arm.
Because he's saying it was, you know, like...
End of May or early
June. End of May or early June.
But they were, like, in school, like...
And they were still in school, and he wouldn't have had the cast from June all the way through the end of the year.
Yeah.
Calendar year, but...
And so she's like, did you...
Alana...
Yes,
Alana approaches him, because also he's missing meetings
because he's too busy boning Zoe Murphy.
Yeah. So that's awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And so she kind of catches him in a lie, and he's just like, listen, don't worry about it, but here's the letter.
Uh-huh.
The basically like, here's, I think what Evan's thinking is, oh shit, I'm getting caught.
Yeah.
Here's the heaviest piece of evidence that will show that
this
we were friends.
This exonerates me. This exonerates
right. No matter what fucking happened.
Here's this suicide note. Like, we were friends. And
right.
She reads it. And so they're trying to raise money.
And so Alana, in a moment of her own desperation,
yeah,
even though Evan says,
don't
share this with anyone, she posts it on the Connor Project's Instagram.
Yeah.
And is like, hey, please.
Yeah.
You know,
and it makes the Murphys look really bad.
Right.
It makes them like look like they were just an awful family,
like,
and
neglecting
like,
Connor,
right? And they were the sole reason that he took his own life, and so like it looks bad. So now the Murphys are frantic because they're like, oh my god, like who posted this? How could this have happened? Like, we're good people, etc.
Like, they're getting angry looks, dirty looks in the grocery store.
Right. And all very cliche places. It's so funny. Mom gets dirty looks in the grocery store. Dad, like, gets dirty looks at, like, work. And it's like, dad goes to work, mom goes to grocery shop, etc.
This movie is sexist.
Whatever.
Well, one norms. Quick note. There was an extra that was very clueless, supposed to be a high schooler at the start of the film.
Ice.
Who is then, like, a mom extra.
I still think that she was supposed to be a teacher.
No.
Okay.
It's during the day. If she's a teacher.
Could have been on a weekend. We don't know the time.
The dad was at work.
Fine. Anywho. Are you telling me that this movie isn't perfect? No way. And so then, like...
Balls!
So then, Evan owns up to everything.
Directly to the Murphys.
Directly to the Murphys, in the same spot that he told them about, you know, for forever. Mm. He's like, okay, so I messed up. And, like, he lists out his reasons, right? He's like, I never had a girl who, like, could somehow see me for me. I never had a dad who stuck it out. No corny jokes, no baseball glove. No mom who just was there because mom was all that she had to be.
Right.
And then he goes on to say, that's not a worthy explanation. I know. And everyone in the audience is like, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I also know. Like, you're right. It is not a worthy
explanation. Preaching to the
choir, bud. And so he kind of goes through essentially saying, like, words fail. I can't, like, there's nothing I can say to make this right. And then Zoe runs away, distraught. Stepdad goes after her. And then Mama Murphy says a phrase white people love.
I think it's time for you to go.
I do think it's time for you to go.
And that's honestly the most painful thing as a fellow white person, is the most painful thing you can hear, because it's like you've fucked up beyond.
Get out of my home.
Like beyond apology.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's the passive aggressive get out.
I think it's time for you to go. Because yeah. That says never come back. Right. And so Evan leaves. No, because Connor's dead. Evan leaves distraught.
Yeah.
And he, like, revisits the tree where he attempted to take his own life. Mm-hmm. And he kind of comes to this revelation that, like, or not this revelation, he asked the question, like, how do I, like, step into the sun? Like, how do I find truth? And, like, how do I stop this craziness that's spun out of control? And then we have the most heart-wrenching moment of any movie I have seen in probably history.
For me, I've seen more heart-wrenching things.
I don't know. This one really got me.
Have you seen the movie Life is Beautiful?
Yeah, but, like, also, like, this connects to my, like, life, you know? Like,
for you personally.
Right.
For you personally. Okay.
Which is why Dear Evan Hansen is a musical to begin with is so impactful to so many people, is because it connects to a lot of... Whatever.
No, you're good. You're good.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So big, so small.
Mm.
So, Julianne Moore fucking kills it. So this is a scene where her and Evan, she comes home and finds Evan, like, crying on the floor. And so,
in his bedroom.
Yeah, in his bedroom. And she comes in and she's just like, do you remember the day your dad left?
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, proceeds to tell this story of just, like, you know, when your dad left, you were just so excited because there was a truck in the driveway. We let you, like, pretend to drive the truck. And, like, later that night, you were like, hey, Mom, is there going to be another truck that's going to take you away from me? And then she's just like, the house felt so big because she had to, like, fill this gap. It's like the perfect bookend to Does Anybody Have a Map, right, in the stage production. Because now it's, like, her ballad on parenthood. Where she's just like, your dad left me in this huge, like, void in the house, and, like, I had to do everything and step up into this, etc. And so, like, everything felt so big, but one day everything will, like, those big things will seem small. And then she also, like, owns up and, like, you know, I knew that there would be times where, like, I would fail, and I did, and I do. And I will, right?
Yeah.
But it's like her comforting song of just like, this all seems right now like it's the end of the world, but it's one day it will all seem so small. And there was not a dry eye in the theater. We looked over to one of our friends we came with, and he's like hiding in his sweatshirt.
Hiding his hoodie.
In his hoodie.
At the end of Dear Evan Hansen, I leaned over to him, hey, R, how you doing? This movie's got me feeling things. I'm all fucked up.
Goddamn, that song
that got me.
And this is one of those instances where you're like, okay, I really like the nuance of this on film, because like it's really nice to see acting in this instance.
Yeah, she does. Good. She does excellent screen acting.
Uh huh.
With the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Does she have the best song in the movie?
She has. Oh,
in the just the movie, not the stage. In the movie.
In the movie, I'm going to say yes.
Yeah.
I think just because it to me, it's like the ending, right? Like, it's almost pretty much the ending of the stage show.
Yeah.
And it, like, wraps everything up where it's just like, we make mistakes. We have to move on from our mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is the end of the world. Also, mm-hmm. Parenthood. Yeah. So it's like all of the themes of the show wrapped up into one song. Sung by Julianne Moore and her ghostly skin.
What else has she done?
Lots of good things. So now Evan's in slightly a slightly better place, and this is where we kind of like deviate. Ben Platt is like quoted as saying like one thing they wanted to do was give this character a little bit more of a redemption arc. And this is the redemption arc. So we talked about a little bit about this earlier, but Evan kind of goes around and tries to find people who actually knew Connor so he could collect stories to share with the Murphys to try to make things right. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we see the second song added that mm-hmm. is A Little Closer. Did we like A Little Closer?
It was all right.
I thought it was good.
It was good.
If you go through and, like, if you're looking through the lyrics, it is very much like a song about, you know, Connor's mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And his, like, his fight to, like, find the light, to, like, get a little bit, like, closer to, like, happiness a little bit. And so I thought it was good. Yeah. Ethical implications aside from how the film was acquired, but whatever. Evan was not the one who found the footage.
But he should not have shared it.
I think
he should not have shared it.
I think it's okay.
Nope.
I think it's okay.
Okay, you're okay. Unethical.
That's in this case, sure. Like, to me, it's one of the only ethical things that he has done in this show.
It's unethical.
I don't know. I don't think it is.
I think it's unethical.
You know,
because if I was to find out that got out, and I was also in that video, and I knew if I was in that therapy session, and it was like done.
It was given to his parents.
Still,
listen. I would be 100% on your team if he posted it to the Instagram page and was just like, "Hey, this was the real Connor. Give us some money for the orchard." I'd be like, "Okay, now that sucks. Like that's messed. Like that's bad." He gives it to the parents.
It's still how he got it. Evan should not have gotten it in the first place. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
He should not have gotten it in the first place.
He shouldn't have sought it out.
If someone sent it to him, that's one thing.
He sent it. Someone sent it to him.
But if he sought it out,
he asked them if they had any like memories to share of Connor, and that's what they replied with.
Right. Evan, at this point, having learned his lesson, should have said, "I can't share that because it's more than just Connor in it."
But like, it's not. Oh, okay. If the video was like actual like group sharing and it was of someone being like, "Hi, I'm, you know, Joe, and I, you know, blah, 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 blah." And like, it was the full therapy session. That's one thing. But it was literally just the recording of Connor singing.
Still.
I don't want to get tied down in the implications of this.
Still.
And
I'm not budging on that one. I'm sorry.
And so the Murphys get that. Evan does not speak to the Murphys again, but he does speak to Zoe.
Because she reaches out to him.
Yes. And she needs a little bit of closure, where she's just like, "Yeah, that was kind of fucked up." And he's like, "Yeah, I know." And then the movie ends.
And that's how the stage show ends. It ends
with him writing a letter to himself again.
Yes.
Saying like,
today will be a good day.
And because today, at least you're you. And that's enough. Fade to black. Fade to Sam Smith's cover of You Will Be Found.
It was a long shot on that orchard. I'm not gonna lie. It was like
it was okay.
10 seconds too long
there was,
shot.
At least there was music playing this time. You gotta take the victory.
It's not a victory in my book.
Take the victory.
It's not a victory in my book.
The victory that there's at least music. Happiness is a choice.
Not in this instance.
So the movie's over.
It is.
I don't know. When all is said and done, I still retain that if you are, or if anyone is not a fan of this, it's because they don't like the premise of the show itself. And to be fair, they were also more likely than not heavily caught off guard.
Yeah.
And did not know what they were necessarily getting themselves into.
Right. I would give this, when all said and done, 6.5 out of 10 stars.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the music was good.
Yeah. Where I'm giving it high praise for the singing, high praise for parts of the story, and all. High praise for the comedy that did exist. That was actual comedy.
Yeah.
Taking off points for unintentional comedy. The Naruto running.
That's just how nerds run.
So stupid.
Uh-huh.
Taking off points for... I would probably give the stage show 6.5 out of 10 as well.
Really? So, you know what? I'm going to take what I'm given on this one, because when I first met you, you probably wouldn't have given this show a 6.5 out of 10.
I would have given it a 1 out of 10.
Hell yeah, that's gross.
I'm giving it a 6.5 out of 10 because the music itself is phenomenal. Ben Platt and the original Broadway cast is phenomenal. The staging is very unique. It is a very unique show. It is a very well done modern musical.
Yeah. Which is hard to do.
Because I've seen some modern musicals. Oh, trust me. I've seen Ghost the Musical. I have seen Sister Act the Musical.
Oof.
I've seen some real... I've seen The Addams Family.
Oh, no.
The Musical.
Oh. Oh. Mm.
That
oh.
one has oh, no. moments, but yeah. they're very few and far between. But, like, overall, I've seen some shit. Modern musicals. This? Very well done.
Very well done.
6.5 out of 10 for the stage and movie because the stage show 7.5 out of 10, the movie 6.5 out of 10.
That's fair.
For ethical reasons.
You took off a whole point for ethical concerns?
Yes.
We will talk later.
I
that is absolutely ridiculous.
Sorry.
Okay, so what if it was just Connor and the counselor? How is that different?
That'd be better.
How is it better?
Because other people aren't involved in the recording and the sharing of that recording.
But the other people were still there, but the video that was shared out was not including their stories.
No, but they were there, and that would, if someone wanted to go into therapy with anonymity, they no longer have anonymity.
So I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10.
sorry.
Because I don't know if that's worth a whole point. Like, if you were like, I'm taking off a point for cinematography and, like, odd choices and Ben Platt being 12 years older than he should be.
All those were also as well.
Okay. Yes. Cool. I just wanted to make sure.
It's not strictly ethical.
I'm going to say 7. So I'm going to go with, you know what, 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
I'm going to go a little bit higher. For a number of reasons. So, once again, music's great, acting was great, and the bones and structure of the show were there. The music that was added did not detract and actually anger me like it often does when they add in random songs to shows that weren't there before. I would also say, like, anything that brings visibility and awareness to mental health, I think is really, really important. And I think providing this film and making a movie about a show that was so impactful to so many people for so many reasons, I think was powerful. It is just is powerful.
Yeah.
And it provides access, and I think there really is something to that. I also don't think the perfect musical adaptation exists.
No.
And this is not perfect.
No. I think the closest of the movies we've reviewed on this podcast, the closest perfect adaptation of a stage-to-movie musical. You know what I'm going to say?
It's probably Little Shop of Horrors.
No.
Really?
Chicago.
Similar. Yeah.
But I would say Little Shop is up there. Yeah. If you watch the director's cut.
Yes, because that includes the, yes.
The true ending of the show.
But
yeah, those two...
That is a common thread in, like, a lot of reviews, is, like, everyone acknowledges that it is hard to adapt these shows.
It is.
And I think Dear Evan Hansen was automatically at a disadvantage. One reviewer pointed out that there's no big staged music, like, crazy musical numbers, right? So, like, if you don't like musicals typically,
you will not like this.
You will not like this, but you might like Greatest Showman, because you might be like, that was fun to watch.
Right.
This is like watching a musical Hallmark, you know,
Lifetime film. Yeah.
And like, it's not uplifting, and if that's your experience, you're not gonna, those expectations will not be met.
Like, if you think musicals, you think the essence of Schmigadoon, yeah, you're not having a good time.
No. Very different. And I just, like, I don't know. If people go and see it, I just encourage you to, like, consider what, A, the show means to people. And if you don't connect, if your experiences don't connect to this, that does not invalidate the experiences of others.
Absolutely not.
And also, like, we've talked a lot about the pros and cons of this film, but, like, if this, obviously, like, if this film means the world to you, then it means the world to you.
Yeah.
This is just a perfect, like, you know, a critique, more so on my end, of cinematography and some of the questionable decisions that were made and how those could potentially hinder the efficacy of the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, 7.5 out of 10. Okay. I would see this again, and I do plan to see this again in theaters.
All right.
And I will cry like a little baby once more.
There you go. So 6.5 out of 10 for me, 7.5 out of 10 for you. This has been season 2 of Stage Rant.
Season 2 of Stage Rant.
We did it. So like last year, we will be having a Halloween episode and a Christmas episode. Musicals are yet to be announced. We have a few bouncing around, but nothing confirmed, so we will not tease anything proper here. But do be on the lookout for a Halloween episode coming out on Halloween, the spookiest day of the year. We will also have a Christmas episode, more than likely coming out on Christmas Eve. So this has been season 2 of Stage Rant.
This has been season 2 of Stage Rant.
Let's go over real quick what we covered in a quick, because this, we basically did this whole season from February to now. So just due to life and the pandemic and both of us getting jobs and changing jobs, had a lot of different things. So we covered
quite a bit of ground.
The prom.
Oh my god, the prom.
Open with the prom.
Best way to start the year.
West Side Story. It was a fun one.
It was okay. It was there.
We did some, ranting about reviews. Remember we read one-star reviews of ones to each other?
Damn.
We should do that again. We should do that again for season 3.
That will be a recurring one.
We talked about adapting movies. Featuring Dear Evan Hansen. That published April 4th.
Wow. We were so hopeful back then.
What? It would have been 5...
April?
6?
June, July, August, September, 5.
5 months and 3 days ago, as of the recording of this episode.
Wow.
You do the math as to when this was recorded. If I am bad, like I have been, and post this late, whoops, you'll catch me. Into the Heights? Or sorry, Into the Woods. Into the Woods.
Oh. Into the Heights.
entering Into the Heights.
Yes.
It's actually the prequel to In the Heights.
Yeah.
It's the journey
into the Heights
from the Dominican Republic to New York.
Yeah.
Following Umbrella. tier.
Pacienza Ife.
Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun one.
My gift is my song.
It's a gang, gang, gang!
Roxanne.
Oh, that rock, that cover of Roxanne, though. Woo!
God, I love Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Roxanne!
Why does my heart cry?
In the Heights, of course. And we got to cover the amazing series.
Schmigadoon!
Cross that bridge
and cross it now.
Cross that bridge and cross it right now. Cross that bridge and cross it right now. Pitch Perfect.
Pitch. I forget. How did I forget about Pitch Perfect?
Or as I called it, Pitch Perfrant.
Perfrant.
And of course, the first. I'm sure many Disney musicals will mm-hmm. cover High School Musical.
High School Musical.
Yeah. And
that was season two.
That was season two.
You know what? You know what's so exciting to think about?
What?
How many musicals there are left to talk about.
We have so many left.
And we have plans.
Yes.
There are plans.
There are plans.
There's plans for the future.
Yep. I think, I can't remember what we decided on, so I'm not going to tease anything here, but I think season three will be entirely one theme.
Oh.
Of musicals.
Oh.
I think we could do it.
Oh, okay.
We could do it.
Okay.
Options. Yeah. But we'll have a Halloween episode and a Christmas episode. I will say this right now.
It might not even be a Christmas musical, honestly. Because you know what comes out December 10th?
What? West Side Story.
Yep.
Oh.
The remake.
We might do that.
The Spielberg remake.
Or, yeah, we might do that as our Christmas episode.
Yeah.
And do a comparison.
Yeah.
Of the original 1962 version.
Yeah, because what screams Christmas more than West Side Story?
Jingle. Jingle bells.
Jingle.
So, yeah.
Season two.
Season two.
And that is a wrap.